It's Celtics coverage on CLNSradio.com.
Sensational move from Kyrie Irving. Oh, Hayward.
That's what I'm talking about.
Horford lays it up and in.
Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll free 347-215-7771.
The Celtics have won 6 straight games. Who could have imagined that? Back when they lost Kyrie Irving, they lost Marcus Smart. Shane Martin was sick tonight, too. So the losses are mounting for the team, and the wins are still piling up. I'm Bobby Manning, and with me tonight is Snotty Drippin, James Olas. I'm wondering how I'm sounding right now, using a different mic than I usually do. Can you hear me, James?
You sound like you're in a public bathroom and you're speaking through the hand dryer.
Well, that's what I want to hear. Well, I get this fixed. Give me your thoughts on the game.
So, again, the Raptors are a really good team. There's a lot of talk about Dwayne Casey for Coach of the Year. DeRozan was getting MVP love because he started, quote-unquote, making threes, even though that's not quite the case. But he's taking threes, and that matters. They came into the game comfortably in the number one spot in the East, and a lot of, you know, there's a lot of chatter. I was actually talking to Matt Moore on his podcast the other day about why would Stevens be Coach of the Year over Casey, and, you know, he gets into point differential and all this stuff. Brad Stevens is doing more with less. And tonight was a perfect exhibition of what we're talking about. Toronto had all their guys. Their injury report was completely empty. No Kyrie, no Smart, no Tice, no Gordon Hayward, of course. And Boston got it done. They stuck with them the whole game. It was tight, neck and neck. Toronto opened up a 5-point lead or 6-point lead late, and next thing you know, Boston went zone. The 2-3 zone once again did the job, and it flummoxed. Toronto looked like they didn't know how to play basketball for about a good, I don't know, 3-4-5 minute stretch, a bunch of turnovers, and that was the deciding stretch of the game. Boston kept executing, and there we are.
It's stunning to see this team not only go down to the bodies it's using to win games. We're seeing Abdel Nader minutes late into the second half again. But the 2-3 zone, I don't even know what to think about that. You never see that pulled out in the NBA, or very rarely. And, you know, it's very hard to run at this level, of course, because you get the 3 seconds call on the defensive end, of course. But for a team that probably hasn't been working on it much, you know, they're not practicing a ton at this point in the season especially. To pull that out on the fly is pretty impressive. And they run it well. You saw a possession late in this game where I saw someone out on the wing for the Raptors out on the right corner, and they just had so much trouble getting it to him over there. The reads across the offense were so slow to react against that. And Toronto turned the ball over like crazy late in this game. And that ultimately ended up being the deciding factor in what got the Celtics out to a massive lead in a game that was close all along. I don't know how many lead changes or ties there were late in the game, but at one point it was 12 ties, 4 lead changes, and it probably just mounted on top of that. How have they been able to run this zone so effectively, Snotty? What are you seeing in it?
I mean, Boston has a roster full of really smart, really coachable players. And, I mean, it's funny because the zone concept is very easy. You just, you know, everyone's watching their area. There's a lot of communication. You can see guys pointing and talking. Hey, guys, you know, cutter, cutter, cutter. You see it happening, right? But it's basically, you know, hey, I'm going to stay in this area. The guy behind me stay in that area. Our center stay in this area. Can you beat us now? And teams, obviously, like you said, aren't used to it. So because teams aren't used to it, they don't know what to do. Right, because all their plays that they run are screens to get guys open or misdirections, and it's, you know, they're dealing with individual bodies. Now they got these guys zoned off, and the same thing with the Jazz. I think the Jazz, again, were on a nice little run. Boston goes 2-3 zone, and it just like threw a stick through their spokes. Teams just aren't used to it. Players are used to going ISO. They're used to being screen and roll, high screen and roll, and rolling hard to the basket or having an advantage from the screen. So they're just not used to it, and it really shows that you got to give Brad Stevens a lot of credit. Against Utah, it was even more a bigger deal because he put out Shimmy, Greg Monroe, and Baines. But yeah, man, it's teams just aren't used to it, and the fact that Brad Stevens is willing to to dip into this well, not just once or twice. I'm pretty sure this is going to be one of those things that we saw Dallas do this a lot too. And even when they were good, Dallas would every now and then go to a matchup zone and just cause teams problems. So yeah, man, it's everyone complained when Boston made the move last summer about how they gave up depth and defense. They didn't factor in that Terry Rozier would make this leap and that Jason Tatum would be this good and Marcus Morris would be this effective. And we got a lot of long athletes in Boston, long athletic guys who can play multiple positions, and it shows. Versatility is a big thing. So great coaching and positional versatility are the two keys, that leads to Boston winning six in a row.
Yeah, and they rode a 17-5 run on the way there, running that lineup that was supposed to be their core lineup to start this year, at least in the front court. The Horford down the middle, playing great spot offense into the later portion of this game. For some reason, Toronto was switching smaller guys onto him. I guess, you know, they're thinking that he hasn't scored a lot recently. He hasn't been on his game, you know, especially around the rim. His touch hasn't been great into the post-All-Star portion of the season. But you can put DeMar DeRozan on him around the rim. He just completely disposed of him on his way to the basket for a three-point play. Then Pascal Siakam ended up down there on him. And those were five key points late in this game that the Raptors just surrendered for having bad post matchups going. So their defense wasn't great late in this game. You know, Serge Ibaka was solid overall. I thought one of his better games I've seen him play with the Raptors. But, you know, they just got discombobulated late in this game. And you talked about all the adjustments Stevens made. It didn't seem like Casey had a lot to throw the other way today. And it really showed, as deep as the Raptors are, not a lot of options of ball handling there, especially in their front court. You see the Celtics, they have Greg Monroe making passes out of the high post. Both of their forwards were running good sets today, creating for themselves and each other. I'm loving what Morris and Tatum are doing for each other. But there's a gap of playmaking between these two teams when it just comes to overall passing on the offense.
Absolutely. And Toronto still, at their core, is, you know, built around the brilliance of Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan. And there are other guys. You know, Fred VanVleet has proven himself really good off the bench. OG Anunoby is that nice kind of – he's going to turn into one of those 3-and-D guys. DeLon Wright can be an ISO, you know, can be kind of a creator for himself. But, yeah, like you said, they're big. Serge, like, hey, when Serge gets moved towards the basket, he's shooting. We know that. And I think Boston knows that, too. That's why every time he drove, they just threw a guy in his way because he's not making a pass. We know that. Serge has an issue reading defenses.
Yeah.
Jonas, same thing. Jonas is Valenciunas. He's a good player, but, I mean, these guys don't have great vision. None of their guys mm-hmm. off the bench. You know? So, yeah, you called it, man. Just the level of playmaking from Boston at so many different spots made a difference in the offense tonight.
And that's what Steven said. You saw tonight more than any of the recent games why the Celtics have been able to be successful in spite of all their losses. They just have so many players who can create, and they've developed an offense where, you know, even though Kyrie Irving's going to be the center of playmaking, scoring, everything when he's out there, they can survive without that because everybody has the ability to make a simple read and play. It's what the offense is based around, and any given person can run a set, it looks like, at this point. I mean, Tatum, Morris, not the greatest ball handlers in the world. I actually think Tatum has the longest to go as a passer. But they were just making nice, simple reads, give and go from the top of the post. They're not doing rocket science out here. They're just running simple plays that are killing defenses at this point. They're still running a very capable offense. I haven't gotten into the numbers or anything like that, but if you look up and down the three-point shooting since Smart, Irving, all of them went down in that Indiana game, almost everyone on this roster is hovering around 40-50% outside over that stretch. So they've been efficient in the shots they're taking, and it's just working. I don't know how you can name anyone else in the NBA Coach of the Year other than Stevens, especially after this game. If they get the one seed, which is still in play, I think you're crazy if you're not going for Stevens.
Yeah, I'm not even going to say the whole one seed thing because, like, again, one team is going to get 75 games out of their two stars. You know, Kyrie's only played 60, and that's it for him for the season. Horford's missed, you know, games with injuries here and there. you know, of course, Gordon Hayward. So it's I don't care about the win total. Even if, you know, let's say they Toronto is the number one seed and Boston's two games back. Are you telling me two games is the difference between, oh, that guy's coach of the year and that guy's not? Some people might look at it that way. You're absolutely right, but it shouldn't be, right? Because and then another thing people are using right now is point differential and net rating. All right, I get it. Well, again, one team has had a complete roster for most of the year, and I think OG missed a couple games and, you know, here and there. And the other team has just been in flux. Boston has been just racked with injuries, and there's and even so, you know, the comeback wins show that, sure, the team might not have as high a ceiling as these explosive teams, stars of the team, but there's Boston's so deep, they're not gonna stop, they're not gonna give up. So it's I definitely think Brad Stevens deserves to win. I can see the argument for other people. Your Casey has shown he's better. Casey's better than he was last year. Great. D'Antoni is driving his offense, and they're historic. I get it. But what Stevens has done to me, no matter what, has been the coach of the year performance.
Yeah, and I said right from the very start when I got this conversation going the other day, this is no knock on Casey. D'Antoni's been amazing this year. Quinn Snyder out in Utah, the way they've rebuilt that roster, although I think most of the credit's going to Donovan Mitchell out there. There's a lot of great coaching going on in the NBA right now. Solid coaches across the board. It's going to be a tight race, but there's got to be a winner. And just like I think Harden's the far and away winner of MVP, even though there's a number of great other candidates out there, LeBron, Davis, you know, that's no knock on those other guys. It's just that Stevens is some steps ahead of everybody with what he's doing this year. I mean, he's on stage with Bill Belichick at this point, and that says a lot in New England when it comes to where your standing is among the coaches.
This is one thing, the reason I kind of disagree with that is that you can say he's performing and he's an up-and-coming coach, he's going to be one of the best coaches, but I can see where people make this argument. Until you start winning rings and winning, you know, playoff series that you're not supposed to win, even though he hasn't had the opportunity really, and, you know, the rosters haven't been there, I'm with you. But this is going to be the argument people are going to use against Brad Stevens because I try to say he's up there with Belichick. The rings, right? I mean, it's hard. At least some significant playoff wins, you know? So I get it. I think he's probably the best coach in the NBA, but a lot of people want to see his resume be a little fatter before they give him that label. And that's their right. I think it's crazy because, right, we're seeing what he's doing on a game-to-game basis. Like, what do you need to see it for three more years before you say he's a great coach? That's silly. So
yeah. That was actually that wasn't a metaphor. He was just actually literally on stage with Bill Belichick recently doing a little speaking event. I know we love to talk in metaphors and cliches a lot, but that was actually a little moment right there. We have Nick Cecento behind the board, as we usually do, and that tells me that it's playoff time. When we get the full cast going around here, I am thrilled because you could feel it in the Garden tonight. The crowd was rocking late into this game. Marcus Morris got ejected with 10 seconds left for barking with CJ Miles and Serge Ibaka.
What weird.
I don't know what Toronto was doing with 10 seconds left there fouling and just causing a little bit of a stir, but more power to them. These two teams will see each other again on Wednesday. And what will probably be a pivotal game in the East race when it comes down to it. We can separate these teams now. Toronto's on a 3-4 stretch. The Celtics have won 6 straight games and 6 of 8, as I said in the opener. So we are with you until 11 o'clock Eastern. Bobby Manning, James Hollis, a.k.a. Snotty Drippin, and Nick Cecento behind the boards, who we're going to hear from. This is the kind of game you have to go back and watch on replay. There was so much going on, so many great developments for this team that you have to track going forward. You gotta see this one again. I mean, even me watching closely in that second half, I'm going to have to go back and look over some things. So if we're missing anything from this game, give us a call, 347-215-7771. I see some people just listening. So if you call in right now, you're number one on the board, and we will get right to you. You have 45 minutes. So let's hear from Nick Cecento. I want to see what his big takeaway was from this game, because I think there's a lot of legit number one takeaways you can have from this one. Nick, good evening, my friend. What are you taking away from this one? We'll get right into it.
Yo, did you guys see Semi Ojeleye dive horizontally for a loose ball? Yo, Marcus Smart, the heart of the team, no more. We have a heart transplant. Semi Ojeleye, throw for a loose ball, bro. I'm just messing with you. But no, seriously, this team is 1,000% for real. And it only makes you wonder if they had a full, healthy roster from the beginning. This team, with everything else that's happened, of course, there's always what if. Maybe these other injuries to, like, Embiid and some of the other guys that have gone down wouldn't have happened. But this team, especially if they bring back the core, and that includes, you know, Marcus Smart, that includes Terry Rozier, bring back the guys they can bring back, this team is undoubtedly going to be, has to be the favorite going into the NBA season next year. But this year, boy, I love Marcus Morris. I mean, there was a time in the NBA when nobody wanted to mess with Serge Ibaka. Nobody effed with Serge Ibaka. That dude was like the guy you didn't, one of the few guys in the league that you didn't want to mess with. Until James Johnson punched him in the face. Now you got Marcus Morris out there, and Serge Ibaka is kind of calm, and Marcus Morris is kind of, you know, is kind of grimy himself. And I mean, I just love Marcus Morris. I really like. I didn't know he could play this well. He's such a surprise to me. You know, I saw him play occasionally before he got to Boston, both in Phoenix and in Detroit. And I think for the longest time, if I'm not mistaken, Markieff was considered the better of the Morris brothers. You can correct me if I'm wrong. But watching
Morris.
Say what?
Yeah, Morris. Yeah, the Morris brothers, I think going into the season, you probably would have taken Markieff. He was a starter on the Wizards team.
Yeah, Markieff is the one that got when he signed that joint contract in Phoenix, he's the one that took the lion's share of the money. And he was considered the better player. Yeah.
So how are you feeling about Morris? We have had a number of discussions on him this year. He's missed almost 30 games this season. And so people underrated the fact that he had to get into the swing of things, not only with the system and all the other things that were coming together. He came in later than anyone to what was going on. Thrilled about coming off the bench the way he was early on. But you looked at those lineups with him and Tatum, and they just weren't working early on. They were operating in similar space. There wasn't a lot of cohesion there. The middle rebounding was having a tough time with Horford at center, which you don't prefer to have most of the time. But now that they're both hitting their shots, finding their swing offensively, it's come together more smoothly in recent weeks. And I don't know if it's the guards that are out there with them, different looks going on there, but I think they just had more to mesh. And both of them can make a play on the fly, on the ball, pulling up, finishing at the rim. They both just have so much in their arsenal offensively that defenses have a tough time reacting, even though they're operating in similar space out there.
Yeah, I think the big thing with Marcus Morris was him getting comfortable and getting back up to 100% from was his ankle, his knee? Yeah, I think it was his knee last summer. And, you know, it takes a while.
He had some knee soreness to start this season.
Right. So I think it took him a while to get back into the groove of things. And then, like, when a player like him has to try to find where he fits in, right? Because, I mean, when Kyrie was there, and then it's Tatum, and it's Jalen, and then he comes off the bench, I mean, you know, he can't just look to – and there were the games, we saw it, right? Games where he kind of would just throw the offense off because he was just looking to score, and he wasn't making shots. But once he starts making – it's all about making shots. When he's making these shots, they're great shots. And that's, I mean, this is how the NBA is. I'm not just saying with him. So, when he was shooting poorly earlier in the year, it just looked bad because it's just gumming the offense up. Now he's making shots. He's making his threes. He's being decisive. And, like, today, there was a pretty long stretch where he carried the offense, where Toronto was getting what they wanted, and they were in danger right before the half, I think, and they're in danger of, like, stretching that lead out. And he would just come down and find a bucket. He would find a bucket against smaller defenders or get to the free throw line. And that's a big, big deal. And there was a time a lot of writers were, you know, a lot of some Celtics bloggers I deal with on social media were saying, well, his value is at an all-time high. Let's trade him for a second rounder right now because he's not part of the long-term picture. And to me, that's problematic because there's nothing wrong with having a good team with good players, even if they're not going to be here forever. There's nothing wrong with that. And he's proven his worth right now. And I'm pretty sure that those same writers are pretty glad that Boston, you know, didn't take their advice. Yeah, man. Sometimes having a guy, he's not getting killed on defense, and he can just get you a bucket, and that's necessary. Even in the space and pace age, a guy who can get mid-range buckets, that's a good thing.
But it's not just the buckets, it's the way that he gets those buckets. I mean, who did either of you guys really know that Marcus Morris had that arsenal of moves? I mean, the guy makes some shots that are some of the most improbable shots. And I remember listening to this show earlier in the season, having discussions on this show earlier in the season about, you know, Marcus Morris taking some bad shots and what were considered bad shots. But as he keeps knocking down those shots, are they really bad shots? I mean, he hits them. He gets his little, you know, he gets in his spot. He gets that turnaround fadeaway. He gets his, you know, his sweet shot, and he's hitting buckets. I mean, the guy is just improbably good.
I think he was doing a lot of dribbling earlier in the season, and he's not a great dribbler. Tatum is much better in that capacity. And now that they've been out there more together recently, and I think Morris does better off those catch-and-shoot opportunities where, you know, maybe he waits for a second. I'm very impressed with how he shows poise out on the three-point line, even when he has to hesitate or sidestep. If you remember that game winner he had 3 or 4 games ago, he had a really tough sidestep in traffic that he nailed anyway, a step or two behind the three-point line. So, yeah, I'm right there with you. The arsenal of moves he has is impressive. His finishing, you know, from all spots on the floor is real smooth. I mean, I've said it over the last few games. It's not quite Melo-esque. You don't see him hitting that turnaround jumper the way Melo does, and he doesn't have the tight dribble that, you know, prime Carmelo Anthony had to create for himself. But he's got similar tendencies in that he's going to unload it from every spot on the floor. You feel good about him shooting from most spots. And think, Kelly Olynyk was operating that similar role last year, and you'd feel, like, thrilled if he got you 20 points once in, like, 10 games. This guy's putting up 20 points in 4 straight games right now. Like, he is another volume scorer behind everything else he already had. Makes you feel pretty good about next year. I know James brought up the fact that people are talking about, you know, cashing in on his value. What are you really going to get from Morris that's better than just having him there as a volume scorer off the bench? Like, this is what you look for in a bench player. And I know he doesn't love coming off the bench, but even, you know, half of what he's giving you right now at his best is still a great bench production.
Absolutely.
What's his contract? How much is he making?
Like he's making $5 million next year.
$5 million next year? Yeah, you can't get what he's giving you for $5 million. And I think the Melo comparison is interesting. I don't think I think he does have that fallaway shot because you see him get that, you know, turnaround fadeaway in the mid range. He's just not, you know, in the comparison to Melo. I think their physiques, you know, are different. Not quite as good of a spot up shooter. He doesn't, you know, catch and shoot the way Melo catches and shoot. The dribbling, you're absolutely correct on that. I agree with that as well. He doesn't have the, you know, the dribbles and the handles to really drive himself to the basket from, you know, the top of the key or from, you know, from the wing and then get himself in there because his dribbling isn't all that great. I don't think Jason Tatum's dribbling is all that great either. Neither is his passing. It's probably the same criticism of Jason Tatum that, you know, that we've had of Jaylen Brown, and that he probably needs to work on his dribbling, which is, like you mentioned, probably the reason why those lineups weren't working earlier. But I mean, those things are really working well now. And hopefully you guys eventually get to talk about Terry Rozier. I'm sure you will. But nice to see Terry Rozier become the passer finally instead of the rebounding little man. He focused on his passing. Every game that goes by, Terry Rozier is getting better at running the offense. And that's scary for Marcus Smart fans. Not that I wouldn't like to see Marcus Smart come back on a friendly contract, but Terry Rozier is going to be – I mean, there's three guys, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Terry Rozier, that look like they could all be future All-Stars on this team, all on rookie contracts. 10 players played tonight, by the way, and 6 of them are on rookie contracts. And you're gonna, and somebody's going to tell me Brad Stevens isn't the coach of the year? It doesn't make any sense. I mean, look at the box score. 6 of those players, 6 of the 10 players that got in the game today are on rookie contracts.
Yeah, and that's like somebody else was saying that. Well, you got to give Dwayne Casey credit for the same thing, and that's not the same thing, though, because, you know, his guys, OG and Fred VanVleet and, you know, DeLon Wright, and their young guys just aren't, they don't have the same level of responsibility that the Celtics guys are playing, right? Tatum and,
exactly,
and Brown are playing 30 minutes a night. You know, Rozier is playing 25 minutes a night, and, you know, he's been a starter now for, you know, almost 20 games out of the season. So it's just not the same. And I don't like when people make false equivalencies, right? One guy, again, Toronto's had their start. And it's not, I'm not going to play the tit-for-tat game. I think Stevens, his resume speaks for itself this season.
If people want to bring up, you know, oh, well, this coach is doing it too, it's not the same, right? Because no other team has dealt with the injuries that Boston's dealt with right now. So, yeah, it's – my thing with Morris is, sure, he's not – I think it's not a one-to-one comparison with him and Prime Melo, of course. Melo is one of the probably top, you know, 15 scorers of all time in the NBA has ever seen. Melo was great in his prime, but the fact is, like, nowadays – I think Marcus Morris is what people thought that Tatum would be like as a pro. And Tatum has proven to me that he's already way better than that archetype of player. He's not just a hunt for my area to get a bucket up kind of player. That's not Tatum. That's Marcus Morris. He's a professional scorer. That's what I like to say. He knows, hey, smaller guy, I'm getting him on the box. Bigger guy, I'm taking him out front, and I'm going to chef him up and use a step back. And if possible, I could drive around and get to the free throw line. And that's just – he knows how to manufacture points, and that's a huge deal for a team like Boston. Since Kyrie went down, Boston is they're playing well. Since Kyrie went down, they're 7-3. Their offensive and defensive rating aren't great, and their net rating isn't great, but they're winning ball games. That's what matters. The defense has really been picking them up. So, yeah, he's a big – go ahead.
The defense has been great, and that is what's saving –
Hey, you're breaking up, Bobby.
I don't think Terry Rozier gets enough credit in that capacity for his defense. He's been very aggressive on that side, and he's been consistent on that side. He is a big net positive. I've said that over the last few shows when we've talked about Rozier, and he's going to get his due praise, Nick. Don't you worry. Because he had 21 points again tonight on 8 of 17. The rebounding does help so much. You see it out there. That second chance point he created for Tatum was a real turning point in this game where he knocked the ball out and they got that wide-open three-point shot. That's a big momentum play in this game. And this game was fun to watch. I'm sure you both agree with that. Finishes at the rim into the later portion sort of dictated this game, and the Celtics were better in that capacity. They just have great motion going offensively right now. But like you said, James, the consistent defense is really what's holding them together right now. And tonight in particular, I felt like the defense struggled early on, especially with the penetration. Raptors were getting to the rim quite a bit, forcing a ton of fouls. Baines was in foul trouble in the third quarter, which sort of forced them to move to that zone, it felt like, even though they've been doing that lately. But overall, the consistency of this defense keeps holding. And what is it? What is it about the system, the players, that allows this defense to be so consistent night in and night out, James?
Versatility. It's the fact that, you know, there's a plethora of 6'7" to 6'9", 6'10" guys with long arms. They all talk. Communication is big for the Celtics. You can see. So, and there's never a lack of energy. So I watch a team like OKC. And the Thunder. And the Thunder are supremely talented at two positions up top, at Russell Westbrook and Paul George. But the rest of the roster is, I guess you would say, similar to the Celtics. I think they have less talent. But they're like, you know, they have long athletes. But you can just see, like, they're just not very disciplined defensively. They're sometimes a little lethargic. They just don't bring energy. A team that just plays hard will play through the Thunder and end up beating them by 10. That's not going to happen in Boston. Because these guys play hard every possession. They went through a lull. I mean, you guys will agree with this. Mid-season, right? Right around the London trip. There was that little lull where the guys just looked burned out. They looked tired, and they kind of let go of the string defensively.
Yeah, right before the break.
Yeah, right before the break. Right before the London trip, and then right through the All-Star break. It was pretty spotty defensively and offensively. Lack of energy is what it looked like. Listless is a good word for it. But yeah, right now the Celtics look rejuvenated. They look like they look fresh. While other teams are dealing with it, you know, end of season kind of blahs, Boston is bringing it right now, and that's where depth I think comes in, right? Because other guys have had heavy loads on their starters and their main guys all season. Boston just hasn't had to do that. They're able to trot out guys like our guy was at Kadeem Allen. He came in the first quarter today, and it sounds silly, and like Jabari Bird, little spot minutes here and there. The fact that our guy Nader, you know, 15 minutes a night, he makes a lot of mistakes, and sure, he's not great, but that's how you save wear and tear on your big guns, on your starters, and on your play. The guys, I mean, look, Tatum and our guy Brown,
they're young. They're young enough, but they're only playing 30 minutes a night. That's awesome. You know, that's really great great roster management by Brad Stevens.
Yeah, James, I'm glad you brought that up because I was looking at the box score and been thinking throughout the season that Brad Stevens has done a fantastic job of keeping all of his starters, including when Kyrie Irving was in the game, including when Smart was in the game, of keeping his guys around 30 minutes and not running them into the floor with, you know, 40 minutes a night, you know, depending on them too much. It's a fantastic point. And, again, speaks a testament to Brad Stevens that even when he does have a full roster, he's not, you know, running his guys into the floor to, you know, to get the wins. He's still rotating in guys like Shemmy, guys like Nader, guys like Bird and Allen. So give credit to Brad Stevens.
Absolutely. And that's been crucial not only to keep those main guys healthy, they really managed Morris well to start the season when other guys were in position to pick him up. But keeping these lower guys engaged, I say this again and again, it's his best attribute. And he feels comfortable, the training staff feels comfortable to sit these guys down whenever they have any ailments going on, you know, managing those concussions that they've dealt with this season very carefully. And that not only saves those guys, but it gives the younger, lower portion of the roster players a feel for the game as well. Semi Ojeley in particular, who hasn't helped them offensively much this season, but he's been given opportunities across the length of the schedule, and it's starting to pay off lately. He's converting on 50% of his three-pointers since everyone else went down. He's been getting called on for more minutes. He's rock solid defensively, as we know, and he's not making or breaking the team at this point, but it's important to have him filling minutes when other guys aren't able to go. Morris in particular, and he has missed a few games over the last week or two dealing with sprained ankles. And Semi's been able to go in there, give them good minutes, and I think it's Stephen's best attribute. Everyone on this roster feels ready to go at a moment's notice. Even the guys who are down in the G League, like they aren't not in a great position making the Boston-Portland trip every other day, it feels like. But they're down here. They're giving them productive games when called upon. I mean, I've been thrilled with the production of either of those guards, even though that they haven't been called on much. And, you know, I'm indifferent to Gershon, even though he's fun, even though he'll knock down a three here or there. His production hasn't been thrilling, but he definitely looks engaged when he's out there. All those guys do. And that says a lot about the coaching, once again. Right, James?
Yeah, man. That's exactly what it is. It's like everyone buys in to the Boston system. That's the thing. And Gershon and Shemmy, at the beginning of the season, I think the game was just too fast for them. They weren't ready for the intensity and speed of the NBA. You could see it. They looked lost. And slowly but surely, especially Shemmy, he's learning the NBA defense. He's been really good defensively, switching off on the smaller guys. And he's not the rebounder I thought he'd be. I thought he'd be a better rebounder, but whatever. He's fine. He's a fine power forward, and he does a good job of staying in front of guys and being physical. And even our guy Yabusele, since Kyrie went down, he's given really meaningful minutes defensively, where he's rotating well, he's showing quick hands, and sure he's not going to score like he does in the G League where he can just take out the dribble, but he doesn't, you know, if he can spot up and hit a three here or there, shoot 35% from three, and he can play tough positional defense, that's a valuable player. So it's pretty cool, man. It's pretty cool to see this team as they've evolved, and that's why I'm not stressing. I didn't want to see any moves made for the playoffs. You know, let's trade, you know, Smart for Tyreke Evans. It's not about right now, because no matter what, and maybe you guys will give me some pushback on this, even if Kyrie comes back and is 100%, the chance of Boston contending are pretty slim, right? I think that, you know, they just don't have enough top-end talent. They're going to be in every game. They're going to play hard. They're going to make anybody work to beat them. But the margin for error is so thin, I don't think that you trade away established guys for a guy like Tyreke Evans, because you're not, because you're making a push for the finals. So I don't know. I'm just happy with what the Celtics do. I love watching them. I love watching these guys develop, and I'm just so pumped to see Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum next season with Gordon Hayward. That's three like upper echelon type wings that you can have on the floor at the same time who do everything. It's gonna be incredible, man.
So I want to talk about the Raptors, because that's an important conversation to have if we're talking about Eastern Conference contention, the playoffs coming up. This post-game show is going to be rolling right into the playoffs. We'll probably be doing 90-minute shows come playoff time with the whole cast of characters we have here. and all of you at 347-215-7771. I do have to get into our read tonight. After that, we'll be heading on the Raptors, and whatever you guys want to wrap this up, we got about 25 minutes left, and of course, we have a special offer for you here, thanks to CLNS Media, just pulling it up real quick right in front of me. Hymns. We've been telling you about Hymns. James did a great pitch for Hymns a few games back. I'm going to try to follow it up right here. We know that 66% of men lose their hair by 35. That one, before you catch it, it's already too late. If you notice in the mirror one morning, you've already missed your chance to solve it. So before that opportunity slips you by and your hairline starts slowly drifting backwards, start to notice those bald spots, don't turn to any of those weird solutions you see online. Go to 4hymns.com, a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, sexual wellness for men. Connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat your hair loss. Well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions. It helps you keep your hair. There's no snake pills, none of that. It's easy. Just answer a few quick questions, and the doctor's going to review and prescribe you what you need. Our listeners are going to get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today while supplies last. So see the website for full details. This could cost you hundreds of dollars if you looked elsewhere. So check it out, 4hims.com/report. You're going to get $5 to try it out. That's forhims.com/report.
Sponsored by Colorado.
Let's get into the Raptors conversation right now. James, how are you feeling about the matchup tonight? Did tonight change your view of them at all?
No, not one game. They're deep. They're very confident in what they do. You could see that everyone knows their role. Kyle Lowry is really taking a step back on purpose, meaning that he's comfortable just letting other guys do their things, and he's picking his spots when he gets really aggressive. We never saw him tonight really try to take off and be aggressive and win this game. Right, I don't think we did. He hit that late deep three, and that was cool. But for the most part tonight, he kind of just played. He played in the background. Same thing with DeRozan. We never saw either one of those guys really try to get loose and maybe put the game on their back, which is a good thing though for them, because that's what the Raptors do. They used to fall back to ISO, and that's where they would go wrong. They actually are running their offense and trust their offense, and so that's a good thing. But then is it a good thing? Because down the stretch of games, you need guys who can kind of impose their will on the game. And that's going to be the thing I'm most intrigued about in the playoffs with them. This new offensive system, this new mentality, it's great, and it's going to get them to halfway through the fourth quarter in a tight game in the playoffs. You got to have guys to take you home. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, and shit hits the fan in the playoffs, as we know. Celtics, they had a plan going in the last postseason, and then it kind of just went out the window when they went down 2-0 in that series. And you almost know something like that's going to happen to the Raptors. Like, they're going to get way behind in a game, especially when in a potential Cleveland series for them. They've had a tough time with the Cavs. I mean, they got destroyed by Cleveland the other day. Not on the scoreboard, but just in terms of their defense, keeping up with the pace LeBron was setting on them. I felt like they got overwhelmed in that game, and that'd be worrisome for me if I was a Raptors fan. And of course, they get to avoid Cleveland if they're the 3 seed, as long as they can hold on to the 1, so that would be beneficial to them, especially if the Celtics are capable of knocking off Cleveland in round 2, which they probably have a chance, a chance in doing so. The seeding's going to be very important in the East. But I'm interested to see how this comes together. I'm optimistic about what Toronto's going to look like. But, I'm not going to completely shut down people who have their doubts. I think some people are going off what they looked like before in previous years, which is tough to do when they've changed their style so much. But they could always fade back to that. And I think that's kind of the concern you're expressing, right?
Exactly. I mean, that's when a certain style of play is in your DNA, you can resist it all you want to, and they've done a really good job of resisting it. But
it,
we do know. Yeah, exactly. No matter what kind of offense you install, those players came up. DeRozan and Kyle Lowry came up a certain way, and they're trusting the offense now. But like you said, hey, they get down 3-1 in the series, and then they're trailing in game
in game five, you know, and all of a sudden it's like, well, you know, DeRozan has an advantage on his man. He starts gunning for mid range again. But that's I mean, it is what it is, man. It's they're in such a strange place because people are saying, well, if they don't do, you know, X this year, then it's a failure. If they don't beat Cleveland this year, if they don't get to the finals this year, then all this was for nothing. And you can't really say that, man. I mean, sometimes it's okay to build a quality team in a quality city and just be really, really good. Everyone can't be the best, you know what I mean? So, it's really interesting that Toronto is in this place. Kyle Lowry is, what, 31, 32? You know, DeRozan's right in his prime. He's 28, 29. But, yeah, this team is not – I don't know if they're built for, like, the long, long haul, but they'll be fighting for the next couple of years. We'll see.
The numbers work out well in the regular season. On the offensive end, defensive end, per 100 possessions, both sides of the ball, they're very strong. It's different in the playoffs, though. We'll see. Nick, we're going to pull in Nick one more time because we haven't heard Nick talk a lot about the Raptors this year. How do you feel about them, Nick? Are they legit?
Nick,
same old Raptors?
Nick, let me ask Nick a question. Nick, I got a question for you, Nick.
What's up?
You see Kevin Durant's comments?
What is that, Kevin Durant's comments?
Yeah, his comments about blogger boys and just telling them to watch the game and how advanced stats can, like, basically, I took from it, he was just saying it can't be all about advanced stats, right? And I'm going to tie that into what we're talking about now because, like, he was just saying the Raptors have a great statistical profile. Their net rating, their offensive rating is great. They're, you know, their top 10 offense, defense. But then if you watch, it's like sometimes if you watch them, they're deep, they're great, but I don't know. Like, just because their advanced stats are great doesn't guarantee that they're going to beat a team like the Cavs who don't have such a great profile. You know what I mean? So looking at what Kevin Durant says, apply that to what we're seeing here between Toronto and the Celtics.
Well, I didn't hear the entire comment from Kevin Durant because, honestly, I – don't give a F about Kevin Durant, but I did catch the quote. I hate analytics, and being a huge Boston Celtics fan and being a huge Brad Stevens fan and Brad Stevens being a huge analytics guy, I think you can make an argument for or against it. Obviously, like you mentioned, you did the rundown of the Toronto Raptors and how they're, you know, analytically in their advanced stats, they look good offensively, they look good defensively, they're, you know, their point differential is great, but do you really think they're built for the long run? No, and I think that, with Kyle Lowry being over 30 years old, with DeRozan being in the middle of his prime, having Serge Ibaka, who's like, who knows how old he is, because I don't think, you know, somebody, I don't know how old Serge Ibaka is. I mean, I think you have to make a move for the Raptors. The Raptors have to make a move now, especially if they do lock up that one seed, because the knock on the Raptors is they have fantastic, you know, regular seasons. They look promising in the regular season. And like Bobby mentioned, they're not built for the long run. And when they get into the playoffs, they almost never make it anywhere. That's why Shannon Sharp calls them the baby dinosaurs. They're just, until they prove something, and it doesn't have to be a championship. It's almost like where Brad Stevens was 2 years ago. He has to win a playoff series. Well, the Toronto Raptors have won playoff series. They just have to get to the next level now. They have to get to the Eastern Conference Finals, and they have to be competitive in that finals for this season to be considered a success, because they keep getting close and getting close and getting close, and then the playoffs come and they fall off. And from what I've seen tonight, I just personally, it just reinforces, and again, I don't really follow the Raptors all that closely either. I know they're in the same division. It's just you can only do so many things at once. I watch them when they play. They just look like the same old Raptors to me. And, yes, DeRozan went off. He had a fantastic game. But, you know, they shut down C.J. Miles. They got under their skin. I don't think Lowry had a very, you know, fantastic game. I don't think anyone else. I think it was DeRozan had 30-something, and everybody else, you know, maybe four other players had something in the teens, which isn't terrible. But, I mean, they just really have to do something. And I think for the Boston Celtics, they're playing with house money. And I think, James, you said this all season. This is the house money. They're playing with house money because nobody, after the first 5 minutes of the season when Hayward went down, everybody just said, Boston Celtics, they're not going anywhere. So the Boston Celtics can make it to the Eastern Conference Finals again with, you know, considering all the injuries and everything else that's happened. That's a huge net positive, especially since they're going to be bringing back all or most of the key players from this year. But the Raptors absolutely have to do something. They have far more pressure. I mean, I think we can all agree with that. They have far more pressure, the Toronto Raptors, on them this season than the Boston Celtics do. Would we all agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
So there
absolutely.
You go.
Absolutely, because there was pressure on them going into this season to break the thing up and go in a different direction and maybe even start over. And credit to them, it's a very hard decision to stick with that and try to hope that change will come, because it's very hard to change something like what they've got up there. You have to institute late-round draft picks, and they did so with OG and I can't do the last name. I'm going to stick first-name basis right there. But OG's been great for them. They've had other guys step up off the bench. Siakam has played a huge role for them defensively. And that's what you got to do if you're in a position like them. And, you know, the Celtics are going to have to do it to some degree, too, because they're capped out at this point. That you got to get younger guys to step up and enter your system and be more productive, late-round picks in particular. And huge credit to them. Even though there's a lot of doubt out there about them, I still think already, even to this point, no matter what they do in the playoffs, they deserve a whole lot of credit. Now, of course, if they fizzle out and return to what they were in the playoffs, none of that's going to matter. But to this point, you can't blame them for something they haven't done yet. And I am still wildly impressed. But we'll see. I still think the Cavs are the favorites in the East just because of how LeBron's playing. I've never seen him play at this level. It feels like he has a new step he can get onto every single season, which is unbelievable. And that's my sole reason right there. They got the weak defensive pieces out of there. At the very least, even though Hill, Clarkson, and all of them haven't fully adjusted to Cleveland, it looks like, they're all capable defenders. So even though the defense is suspect at this point still, it's not horrendous, which I think was going to cost them the East early in the season. And that alone is going to be a win. And Kevin Love, I think, is going to score enough for them. How are you guys feeling? James first. If you had to pick one front runner in the East at this point, who would you go with?
It's hard to bet against LeBron James. It's really hard to bet against LeBron James. Because, like you said, he's playing at a different level. We just don't know when the crucible of the playoffs starts, how guys like Jordan Clarkson and Rodney Hood are going to perform against the increased pressure. And that's my thing. Larry Nance, same with Larry Nance. Nance is great right now, regular season for those guys. Tristan Thompson's been playing great for him. I don't know how they're going to perform in the playoffs. I don't know if they've established enough chemistry and enough of that. Yeah, just chemistry, you know, with a team that's trying to – we know that the best teams in the playoffs are the ones that you have been together for a while and they really click. They know where everybody's going to be. These guys don't have that, you know. They don't have that yet in Cleveland. It's impossible to have that. They've only been there for about, you know, a couple months. So I give – my head says Toronto. My heart, and then, you know, Boston's right behind them. But then, like, just watching the teams play – It's so hard to bid against LeBron James, man. He's a one-man wrecking crew. So I still think until further notice, until he loses before the Eastern Conference Finals, he's going to the Eastern Conference Finals.
But, James, I have a question for you, though. The thing that LeBron James doesn't have, and I know that he's going balls to the wall right now. He's playing out of his mind. I think if you were, you know, getting back to the analytics argument, if you were to look at his defensive analytics, he's ranks fairly low defensively. So I think what he's doing now in terms of playmaking, in terms of offense, in terms of rebounding, is coming at the expense of not really playing all that hard on the defensive end. But mm-hmm. also I think one thing that matters a lot in the playoffs that – the Cleveland Cavaliers absolutely don't even have is coaching. They don't have a coach right now. So I think LeBron James just wilding out and doing LeBron James things during the regular season when really, I mean, what are they playing for? You know what I'm saying? I mean, what are the Cavaliers playing for? They're not going to fall to the fifth seed, I don't think. So what is it going to – they're going to be the third or fourth seed, and I don't think that really makes a difference to them, especially now that Embiid is out and they're probably not going to play the Sixers in the first round, or if they do, it's not as – you know what I'm saying? Seriously, I mean, like, what is he playing for? He's really just showing out as far as I can see, for himself. Like, look at the stats. He saw that Russell Westbrook won an MVP last season, basically padding his stats. And when you look at Russell Westbrook's season last year, he really padded his stats. All those cheap rebounds. He was doing the assisting like Rajon Rondo did. And I think that's what LeBron James is doing now. He's making a case for his legacy, stacking up all these stats. He's, you know, passed Michael Jordan for games in double digits. He just passed Kevin Garnett for steals, total steals in the career. I think what he's trying to do right now is rack up all those stats so that his legacy, you know, he knows that if he gets to the finals, he's probably not going to win that with the team that he has. So he's just racking that stuff up right now. And I think when you get to the playoffs, the big advantage that Boston has over any other team in the East is Brad Stevens. And the weakness that the Cleveland Cavaliers have is they don't have a coach. And when they do have a coach, he's having heart attacks because LeBron James is screaming at him on the sidelines.
Hey, chill out, chill out.
Is that going to affect them, though?
No, see, that's my thing, right? Because it comes down to, can you stop LeBron James? That's all it comes down to. You're going to have Kevin Love and LeBron James on the court for 40 minutes tonight. And whoever's playing, they're going to keep just dubbing guys around them until they find guys that can hit shots. And LeBron might give you 40, 10, and 10 every night, and then you're going to lose. It's what it boils down to. I get it. Stevens can scheme all he wants to. Stevens has been great. If you can't stop LeBron James and find a way to limit everybody else, which is really hard because LeBron James is so adept at finding shooters everywhere. So you can't either you stop everybody else and then LeBron goes off, or you somehow stop LeBron and everybody else go off. But you got to pick your poison. And this is year number eight, right? Year number eight, LeBron possibly going to the finals. So it's tough, man.
I think the East is still in a place where they can take it just off LeBron being LeBron. Especially where he's reached a new level this year, it feels
That's it.
Like.
That's it.
But that only builds on what they've already done in recent years, where they've just kind of rode his back to the finals. My thing is the coaching is when, you know, finals time. They go up against a team that's better than them in the Warriors. And if they put in these little adjustments here or there, they did different lineup nuances, maybe they put LeBron in the post a little more in certain, you know, there's little things here or there I think they fall behind in the coaching aspect that I think make a difference against the Warriors. I just think there's such a gap in the East when it comes to players who can take him on directly.
Yeah.
And that's still the Celtics' biggest problem when we think about it now. Say Kyrie Irving returns, is he going to be in a place where he is going to be able to match LeBron's greatness? That might have been the possibility earlier when he was starting to hit his stride, but he's going to have a little bit of an adjustment period coming back from knee surgery in the middle of the playoffs. I don't think enough people are making a big enough deal about that. I mean, I know it was a minor knee surgery, but he'll be out a month and a half at that point, just jumping into the second round of the playoffs.
He was never going to match LeBron's greatness. He was going to just do what he can to offset it. He was never
you know what I mean, though. Like, he can be that kind of role for the Celtics when they need him to step up and have a great moment for them.
Yeah, I do know what you mean. I mean, you're absolutely spot on. It's like, I think I'm most positive, and we're going to have this conversation in the playoffs tonight. Watch. People literally forget how great and dominant LeBron James is in the playoffs as the season goes on. As they get further away from his last playoff performance, they start thinking like, oh, yeah, what we're seeing right now is LeBron, and he'll do this in the playoffs. No, LeBron has another level in the playoffs. And he does this every year, and then we have this conversation about how, wow, this is playoff LeBron, I forgot about it. And then we forget about it all again next year. So I'm not mythologizing LeBron. He's a human being. He is one hell of a basketball player, and he is the best of his generation, arguably the best of all time. He's in that conversation, and he's there for a reason. And I'm not going to Brad Stevens. I love the sets. I love what he does. I love the talent. I love everything in Boston. They just don't have anyone to match up with LeBron James. And you know, that's just how it is. And then defensively, what's up?
We keep talking about LeBron James has another gear for the playoffs, but we're seeing LeBron James turning on that gear right now for some odd reason in the home stretch. There's a possibility he could get tired. He's not a young player anymore. I know we all think he's invincible, but there's a possibility. I'm not saying it's going to happen or likely, but we've never seen LeBron James do this before. And we haven't, I mean, aside from that early – his first stint in Cleveland, where he took the like probably the most trash team ever to the NBA Finals. I mean, he's still developing team chemistry. He's still doing things. He's going to have at least two or three other players step up. Even if he goes 45, 12 and 10, he still has to come up with another 50 points somewhere. And who's going to score those 50 points?
Well, it's going to be Kevin Love's going to give you 20, 25. But I was going to say that a big difference, and this is going to be key, he's not always, because in the finals, well, we saw it happen when he didn't have Kyrie. But Kyrie's been running with him the last 3 years, and Kyrie's been great in the playoffs with him. Now, people are saying that Kyrie left because, he kind of wanted to be out from LeBron's shadow. And that's probably true, because I think people don't realize how great Kyrie's been in the playoffs. And so we're going to see how he performs, how LeBron and the team look when it's George Hill and Jordan Clarkson instead of Kyrie taking the shot. That's going to be interesting.
So we have 3 minutes left. And my big question coming out of this for both of you is, for the Celtics when it comes to the playoffs at this point, they are not going to have Marcus Smart in the first round. I have a tough time thinking Smart's going to come back, period. But Chris Paul came back from a similar injury quickly, so we'll see about it. And then Irving as well, another question. Second round probably at the earliest, but I don't know about that either. It's still such a mystery at this point. So based off what they have, 2 minutes, I need both of you in a minute to give me what the playoff rotation's going to look like. Who's going to be involved and what – they're going to roll with in terms of just, who's going to get minutes, who's going to get cut out. And keep in mind, Aaron Baines hit a few threes tonight, so you got to factor that in as well. He's stretching the floor now, I guess. So we'll start with you, Nick. What's your playoff rotation?
The playoff rotation, I think pretty much what we saw tonight, minus Bird, minus Allen. I don't think they're going to see any minutes in the playoffs, and if they do, it's a disaster. I think it's also probably going to depend, not necessarily the rotation of players, but the minutes that the players get is going to depend on who the Boston Celtics face in the first round. If they play the Miami Heat, I think you might see a little bit more of Greg Monroe and Aaron Baines. If they play, the Bucks, maybe go a little bit smaller because the Bucks have all those, those fast, quick, long players that are similar to the Boston Celtics, quick, long players. But I think that what you saw tonight, and I don't have my box score in front of me because I scrolled away from it, but I think, minus those young guys, you're going to see probably less of Shemmy. I was looking at the rotation tonight, and I said, this looks like the rotation. The guys that got double figures tonight are probably going to be the guys, in addition to, at least in the first round, since there's no Kyrie, there's no Marcus Smart, the guys that got double figures tonight, because this was as much of a playoff atmosphere type game as there has been this season, because it's deep in the season and fighting for things. Greg Monroe, Marcus Morris, Jaylen Brown, Terry Rozier, Baines, Jason Tatum, and Al Horford are definitely going to be probably the 8 guys that you're going to get in there. I definitely think Monroe is going to find a place depending on who they play.
Scotty, take us home.
It's going to be Horford, Tatum, Brown, obviously, Kyrie. Rozier and Baines are getting minutes. Morris is getting minutes. And I think, if there's foul trouble, we'll see some Monroe. I think that's going to be about it right there. They're going to probably shorten it down to about an 8-9-man rotation. And honestly, if Monroe's playing the way he is now, I'm fine with him not leaving the bench ever again. He's struggling right now. He looks like he's regressed. He actually looked decent for a couple games or a little stretch, and he's actually been looking real bad lately.
I wish I had time to argue with you about that. I really do.
All right, but no, he's been the last couple of games has been pretty bad.
Let me just point this out.
You had your turn. You're good. he still has to play. I'm not mad at him playing. I'm not saying they're going to just bench him. He has there's certain rotations and certain matchups that he's going to be good against. That's fine. He's missing layups. He's just blowing rotations. He just hasn't been sharp last couple of games. It's okay. He hasn't been great. He's here. He's house money also, so it's fine. Ojale is probably the odd man out. We won't see any more Nader. And like you said, Burden, Kadeem probably won't, they might even make the playoff roster. We'll see. I want to see my guy.
Keep it tight. That's what it's going to be. For the first time ever, actually, for them, I think it's going to be a real tight playoff rotation. Nick, I'll give you 1 minute to fire back on that Monroe point, and then we're out of here.
I just wanted to ask if we saw early in the first half DeMar DeRozan driving from about 15 feet on the elbow, from about the top of the key maybe, trying to drive to the right baseline, and Greg Monroe, slow-ass, non-rotating Greg Monroe, staying on his hip, and then forcing him into a fadeaway air ball. Greg Monroe has been making some solid plays for the Boston Celtics. Is he lighting up the box score? Not really, but he's playing 17 minutes a game and he's not in fantastic shape. But he still was second on the team in rebounds tonight and has been leading the team in rebounds for most of these games. 6.7 rebounds and 2 steals. Fantastic steals. Does anybody watch him poke away in the interior passing, the pass to the inside? He pokes those away so much. He gets hands on balls. He has soft hands, and he's pretty quick on his feet on offense.
Then he turns around and gives that bad boy right back. He will turn that thing over like it's a pancake. He turns it over so much. So, I mean,
one turnover tonight, bro. One turnover.
Okay, tonight. He's been bad lately, man. Last game, he had like 4 turnovers. He just,
and half of them were his fault because players weren't catching his passes.
No.
Jason Tatum faked the baseline cut, and then he totally blew the pass.
He's driving and spinning and losing the ball. He loses the ball on the drive all the time. So if you – that's fine. You don't have to agree. You can love him. That's fine.
We'll agree to
disagree. Good night, everybody. That is the Celtics post-game show. I wish we had more time to flesh out this Monroe thing because it is an interesting conversation.
No,
We're back on Tuesday. Bucks Celtics. Snotty Driven, James Hollis, thanks for being here. Nick Sesento, good to have you back behind the glass. Glad we got you a little more involved today.
Thanks, bro.
I don't know who our hosts are going to be on Tuesday, but it's going to be good stuff. Bucks Celtics, then Raptors Celtics on Wednesday. That's a national TV game, so we're going to see these two again real soon. And maybe we'll all be back here for that one. Who knows? Thanks for sticking with us. You can get this on demand on iTunes every morning. Can't stay up with us. Get it there. I'm Bobby Manning. That's our show. We'll see you next week.
This has been the Celtics postgame show on CLNSradio.com. Thanks for listening. The Celtics might not be in action every day, but we are, so stay connected. Follow us on Twitter at CLNSradio and check out our broadcast schedule for the best weekly sports podcasts on the web.